Where are you? Are you in bed? Or are you leaving the first human footprint on Mars? Are you jogging? Or are you about to pull off the heist of the century? Are you in your car? Or are you praying those red eyes in the darkness can't see you? A voice in your ear can take you anywhere.
Audible. Get your first audiobook for free and feel every word. $7.99 a month after 30-day trial. Starts automatically. Terms apply.
Simply the best.
Every time he sees me, his eyes light up. I can almost hear his heart beat faster. He looks at me the same way he did when we first met. For him, it's love at first sight every day. For me, it's heartbreaking.
Loving someone who's living with dementia is not easy. For support, advice, or to make a donation, visit dementiasa.org.
You're listening to VUCA Online.
You are rocking with the best.
Hope Makers Show, bringing hope to the world, one conversation at a time.
Ezra Max, Dr. Mangesi, we come together.
Welcome to the show, man. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good to meet you. I think you are the solution to my sister's problems. So immediately I saw your bio, I was going like, oh my God, what a gift, because we have been waiting for somebody like this. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. You are on VUCA Online Radio, and we are talking hope because Wednesday is Hope Day. So we have Rabbi Ezra Max, who is monkeying around in the studio. So you should actually see it.
Got to watch the monkey. The monkey is with us today. Yes.
Welcome to the show, Ezra. Welcome to the show. Before we kick off, I know you don't even know what this is about, except the fact that this is all about hope. It would be good to, I usually ask the guests to share a little bit about themselves with the audience. What do you want the global audience to know about you?
About me?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, I think the most important thing to know about me is that every day I try to answer the question, what is my purpose?
Yeah.
Why am I here in this time, in this place, in this body? And how do I best serve? How do I best show up and live into that this purpose, this unique purpose, knowing that if I figure out what it is, and it's a gift to figure out what it is,
yes,
I will still need to work to achieve it.
Yeah.
I will probably make mistakes on the way because I am human and I'm not perfect. I am far from perfect.
Yeah.
And that if I get it right, when I get it right, with God's help, I will get it right.
Yeah.
Then I will have a new challenge with a new purpose.
Yeah.
And the task is not yet complete.
Yes. Yes. Sounds good. It's always fascinating whenever I ask people to introduce themselves, especially the people that have been on this show, particularly. Not a single person has ever said, hi, my name is Ezra Max, and I am a rabbi, and I am based in Brooklyn, New York, and I am...
Oh, I'm sorry. Was I supposed to say that?
Oh, no. It's always fascinating that almost all of you went very straight into purpose and into why you all are here and how you're saving the world and all of those things, which is fascinating for me, which leads me to a question. I'm going to ask it, but I'm going to have to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we answer that question, right? You talked about every day you wake up looking for purpose and connecting back with your purpose and reminding yourself of your purpose. I think the big question that people always ask is, how do you find this thing? And is it a real thing, or is it this thing that all of you coaches say because you've been taught in coaching school to say it. So, so if you can just hold on for a moment, we need to get the people to go and get a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, and all of those things, and then we'll be back on Vugonland Radio, and you are on the Hope Makers Show, and I have Rabbi Ezra Max on the show, and he is doing very important work when it comes to connecting particularly teenagers and adults. This is an important work. But before we talk about that, we kind of really need to know a little bit about him. He does other things, but, you know, I'm always trying to find what is the focus area here? Because, these people are like so busy. But we'll be back. Let's take some break.
Highway Harley Davidson. There are no words.
Broadcasting worldwide online 24/7.
It's Vuga Online, your inspiration radio station.
You are on the Hope Makers Show, proudly sponsored by Westwood International and the team there. And it has been very exciting to be on this program. Already we have had what? I think, Ezra, you're probably episode number 18, if I'm not mistaken. So we've spoken about hope a lot, and a lot has come up. But one of the things I've seen or I hear a lot as a pattern is the question I asked you just before we took a break, right? Many of the people that I come onto the show and I talk to them, almost invariably, none of them starts talking about their day job. They are talking about their life job, right?
Yeah.
Which I think for me, that's actually how I could talk about it, right? So that's actually quite fascinating. Does purpose exist, or is it something that those nice people at coaching school said you should have?
I love that question, Dr. Mungesi. I, as you asked the question,
yes,
it dawned on me that everything that we know is a construct of something that we create.
Yes.
And so, does it exist or not exist is completely an individual choice.
Aha.
And the reason I say that is because there's a belief system which will say that life has purpose and meaning.
Yes.
Or not. We will either give purpose and meaning to something or take it away. And we actually get to make that choice. So essentially, we are choosing, which comes to a sort of a bigger, more global question is, what are we doing here?
Yes.
And I think the topic was going to be hope. And yes. I've heard the term hopium, and I love the term hopium.
Ah.
And some people are very offended by it, but I enjoy it because for me, it helps me remember or recommit to a belief system that we are not random. See, if everything is just random and there's no master controller, if there's no eternity, if there's no God being, godly being, spirituality, then the concept of a soul gets questioned.
Yes.
And then if we're just here, then we're just like the monkey, maybe. Where's the distinction? Or yesterday I was talking about my old car, the Impala. And as I said Impala, I heard the guide in the bush in outside of Johannesburg, or Joburg. He said Joburg. Talking about, oh, look, Impala. And so, we could just be running in the forest. And you know, we are, I think we're the hot dog of the bush if we're just Impala, right? Is that how it goes? Yes?
Yes.
I don't know. Somebody made that expression once, but I don't know if that's true. Maybe they said it was the Burger King of the bush. I don't know. Anyhow.
Yes.
I'm going sideways, but I want to come to the point that we could just be random or less intelligent or less purposeful, less meaningful, in which case, where's that distinction between the Impala and ourselves?
Yes.
And the idea that we have choice beyond just instinct. We do have instinct. We have an animal brain in the neurobiology, mm-hmm. and we also have thinking and thought. Mm-hmm. And we can think forward and we can think backward. Now, maybe we can't. Maybe it's just a dream. Maybe it's all just a dream.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's all just a dream, then we get to choose what dream we're in.
Aha.
And purpose and meaning is a result of giving context to this existence that we're in.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so I don't know about the teachers in coaching school, but if all the teachers in coaching schools are telling everybody to find their purpose and to find their meaning, then yes. And I'm excited for that. Because at a minimum, it'll change the way people go through life where it just happened to me.
Yes. Yes.
Or it was done to me in the victim mentality.
Yes.
Or they can say, hey, what is it that I or you choose to do today?
Yes.
Which is the most empowering message a person could have.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I don't know if I answered your question directly, but indirectly, where what I'm trying to say is, I don't know what other coaching schools do, but if I teach a coach, I would certainly teach them, try to find your purpose. And to the second half of your question, how do you know what is your purpose?
Yes.
And that's a tough one.
Yes.
My answer, and it's only my answer, is that A, it changes all the time. And B, it is where you are most effective and where you struggle the most, which is probably in the exact same spot.
Yes. Yes. So there's a paradoxical push and pull that kind of gives you a sense of angst of sorts. And and right there, that's where you're sitting and you're going, I'm struggling with this, but I love it at the same time. So this must be something I'm here to do.
Yes. And I talk about my life of paradoxes all the time.
Yes, 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 yes.
Tug of war, if you will. And if there's no tug of war, then that's probably not it.
Yeah, yeah. That's quite fascinating because I was going to ask you, and I think you're going there a little bit, and because I'm hearing a lot, and as I said, we've had lots of conversations here on the Hope Maker Show about, okay, so how do you find hope? And we'll talk a little bit about that for you in terms of what is that for you and what does it mean, etc. But I just like having conversations with people. And I feel perhaps I'm guided, so I just go and ask what I ask. But what's fascinating, when you say that, and you talk about the issue of paradoxes at one level, but you also say, my purpose changes all the time. How did you know to find it? You are 17 years old, for example. Did you already know at 17?
That's a great question. At 17 years old, like most other 17 years old, I for sure did not know.
Yes.
And I for sure had struggle, like any normal, healthy 17-year-old who's trying to figure something out will. Yeah. And I think that the average teenager is switching from between being a child to becoming an adult.
Yes.
And that is why when we describe teenagers, we mostly use language that sounds like angst, moody, broody, in the hoodie, etc. And the choices that teenagers make are sometimes not the best or healthiest choices. Yes. And that doesn't mean that children don't make bad choices or not the healthiest choices. And it doesn't mean adults don't make terrible choices. Some
catastrophic.
Catastrophic.
We have wars all over the place, and it's not 17-year-old.
You know, I used to tell parents, and I've spent a lot of time with teenagers, working with teenagers and supporting parents who have teenagers. And so including I helped start a school for girls who aren't making it in a regular school and were almost on the streets to bring them into an environment that was more healthy and boundaried and appropriate and help them repair and grow and make better choices. And most of the girls go on to lead lives of success, graduate, you know, get jobs, get married, have children, you know, do something in the world. And so the point I'm trying to get to is that the struggle in and of itself is part of the development. And I used to say the difference between 2 years old and a 2 year old and a teenager is just the language they use, because a 2 year old probably doesn't say some of the mean things a teenager might say. And then my son, when he was around, I want to say 18-ish, 19 years old, one day we're walking together and he says to me, "Hey, Dad." I said, "Yeah." He says, "What's the difference?" He says, "You know that joke you say about two-year-olds and teenagers?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "What's the difference between teenagers and 40-year-olds? And I looked at him. I said, "That's a good one." Mm-hmm. I said, "The price of their toys?"
Yes.
Because that's the one I would have gone with. And he said, "That's good." I said, "Okay, what do you have?" Yes. He says, "The amount of damage they can do." Uh-huh. Ah, catastrophic choices.
Yes, absolutely. Right? But I question to get distracted because you were talking then about a 17-year-old. You don't really know what your purpose is. And how did you know to find it?
Oh, so I don't know if I knew at 17. At 17, I know that my parents were attempting and doing a great job in trying to help me mature and grow up. I was attempting to grow up and be more mature than I was, and then simultaneously trying to hold on to being a child, right? Yes, and there's a paradox. Talk about paradox. The parents want the teenager to be an adult when the adult, the teenager wants to be a child, and the parent wants the teenager to be a child when the teenager wants to be an adult. That tension.
The mess.
The purpose of the 17-year-old, if you will, on average, is to navigate that tension.
Yes.
To navigate that challenge, to test the waters in both directions and say, hey, who am I at the core of my being? Now, some people at 17, I remember my grandmother wanted me to become a medical doctor.
Yes.
And school was a struggle for me. I have some learning challenges, and school was incredibly challenging for me. Sitting in my chair for long periods of time was not the way I was hardwired.
Yes.
And I said, 10 more years of school? No. And she was like, but you could be a doctor and you're good in medicine. And well, yeah, I guess. And it happens to be, she may have been onto something. I've run 3 different ambulance companies in New York City over the last 30 years.
Yes.
So maybe not a doctor, but I've certainly helped a lot of people in medically, and a lot of the EMTs who worked for me are now in the medical field. So there was something that she planted.
Yes.
A seed, if you will. And I don't know because we don't know. But certainly there's a connection. I actually just found this morning an article that was published with a picture of me receiving an award from the local assemblyman in Superstorm Sandy. It was going back about 7 years ago. I was running an ambulance company in Brooklyn, and we got flooded, and we had like 40 or 50 volunteers almost around the clock for 3 days on the street out there helping the communities that we serve. And so just as a reflection of that, in the moment, it was just what we did. Yes. And when I saw that little article today, that I pulled a sheet out of the magazine and I put it in a filing cabinet or in a drawer, and it popped itself out today. So I had it in like, oh, wow, look at that. And now it feels incredibly good to reflect back on that moment. So I'm not answering the 17 question because I'm not sure I will ever know that answer.
Yeah.
What I do know is there was a little bit of that tension, not tension, good tension, not bad tension. How do you know when you have a real diamond and a fake diamond? I said this yesterday and I don't know who says it, so I can't quote it. Do you know the difference? How do you know when it's a real diamond and a fake diamond? Because my friend's daughter got engaged and she got a beautiful diamond ring.
Yes.
And they gave her a gift, a beautiful duplicate, so she doesn't walk around with a really expensive ring on her finger. She can wear something that looks almost the same.
Yeah.
One costs $400. The other one costs $10,000 or more. And he shows them to me. He says, "Can you tell the difference?" And I'm looking and I'm looking and I'm looking. I'm like, "This one looks nicer." And he goes, "That's the fake." The way you know it's a diamond is with the imperfection.
Yes.
It's the imperfection that makes it a diamond. It's the imperfection that makes it beautiful. It's the imperfection that gives it real value.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yes.
So the teenager who's not yet fully developed adult, they're working on it, has, I don't want to say imperfections, they're perfectly imperfect, as I am as an adult, just for the record. There's no part of me that thinks I am perfect. Nothing.
Yeah. It's such, It's actually fascinating. I mean, when you put it that way, because most of the time we're continuously looking for perfection. We're continuously looking to show up as complete. We are looking to show up as got it together. And speaking, I don't even know where this came from, the 17-year-olds, but we will spend time talking about teenagers. Again, that's part of your job description. But it is amazing how, as parents, we expect the children, the teenagers, to show up as exactly that perfect, shiny, sparkly thing. And as you say, but a real diamond doesn't shine like that. So that's powerful. So we need to take a musical break. We are all about more music, more inspiration. And then when we come back, we continue this conversation. And at some point, we get to talk about hope. But I think for me, these conversations, the hope makers, the work of the hope makers all the time is around, how do we bring hope to the world? How do we get people to make the difference that makes the difference? And we're talking today with Rabbi Ezra Max, an experienced professional certified coach and expert facilitator. He supports businesses, executives, parents, and even teens, very important, to overcome their struggles and challenges. He has been coaching full-time for 18 years and recently retired, as you heard, as an EMS chief, after being a volunteer EMT for 30 years. But for now, we need to take some music. And we are on VUCA Online Radio and the Hope Maker Show. We'll be back.
Don't take credit. Unexpected coming from a bank. But just think about it. Using credit to finance a flashy lifestyle to show that you've arrived won't help you live better. What's new today is old tomorrow, except for the debt that you still have to pay. But do take credit to renovate your home, buy a more reliable car, or pay for your children's education. If that's your goal, then Capitec will help you realize your dreams. Because living better starts when you get credit for the right reasons.
More music, more inspiration. VUCA Online.
Coach Rabbi is terrific at helping parents and teens get out of their stuck place. He helps them move forward with their lives and collaborates well with therapists. This is one of the comments from one of your clients, Rabbi. It's always good. So before we talk about this piece, because I really want to talk about it, but I wanna work with my own mandate first, because I'm gonna get in trouble.
I feel some tension, Dr. Mungesi. This feels like your purpose right here. There's a tension to be my mandate, and there's a tension to do what's pulling me, and there's some intersection right in the middle where we are going to play.
If there's one thing I have no problem with, I will tell you for sure. And this is where I ask you a question, because every time I talk to people about purpose, and particularly people who are still searching, and they ask me, and I deal quite a lot as well. As a scientist, I deal quite a lot with other scientists. But where is the scientific frame for that? I said, but here's the thing about the scientific method. It is one way of looking at the world. It is like one. The universe is what? We have a multiverse. So we've figured this out now, that there's a lot more than what we know. So for you to come and tell me, where's the science? But here's what I'll tell you about the science from my people. My people, Mali Doma Some, who's one of, he's actually interesting in Boston, even if he's a Dagara from Ghana. He says, when a child is conceived, the community already knows what this child is there for. And everything in life after that conception works and colludes to make sure that this child does what they're supposed to do, even if they end up dying pre-birth, they've still done their job. And that's very deep, because I spend a lot of time then helping parents to adults to kind of figure this out, that, okay, so you were conceived. So what happened? What have been all of these incidents that tell you? So I think for me, I know where I am, and I know it wasn't an accident that we talked. In fact, when I saw it, I'm going, oh, this is amazing. But let's talk about hope for a moment, right? You come across quite energetic, you come across quite positive and highly spirited. Do you ever get hopeless?
Almost, but not really.
Okay.
It's a paradox. That's a great question. 2 years ago, when COVID started, I didn't know at the time I had gotten COVID before it was known as COVID. Yes. I seldom go to the doctor. I'm usually in good health. I'm active. I eat okay. Yeah. You know, I don't sleep enough and have too much stress, but that's my own doing. And suddenly I was exhausted. We had run a weekend retreat with almost 1,000 people. It was glorious. And then I came back and I slept for 72 hours. Like, I just slept.
Yes.
Something is wrong. And then I was okay. So back to running. Life is good. And I was running and I was out of breath and something was wrong. And so I went to the doctor and there was nothing wrong. And then COVID started. And then when they asked for people who may have had COVID for plasma antibodies, yes, I was one of the first people to line up and say, take my blood. So, yeah. And I remember the beginning of COVID, there was a pressure, a tension in the world,
yes,
a feeling in the yes air.
Yeah.
It was a quiet. There was a shift in so many things, both tactile, emotional, and intellectual. Mm. And I remember thinking, oh boy, what's going on here? And then my spiritual teachings, my spiritual foundations kicked in. And I said, okay, I need to pray with more vigor, with more intention. What does God want from me, from us, from my family, from my neighbors, from my community, from the world? There's a lesson here to be taught. And I, in an almost militant way, I said, we have spent so much time, and I want to pick on scientists for a minute, spend so much time in science trying to undo the idea of God and religion in the world, because we're limited as scientists to the tools that we use to measure. Mm-hmm. If you find me a scientist who's on par with God, I'll show you a scientist who might be able to measure spirituality and, yeah, and godliness. But since we actually can't measure the soul yet, to my knowledge, I don't think any scientist is qualified yet to have a conversation about this. I mean, they could talk about whatever they want, but no disrespect to any of the brilliant scientists and mathematicians out there. In fact, I have a mathematician professor friend who wrote his entire thesis of the only thing we know from math is that we don't know. And he proves it with a whole 200 pages of theorems, which are way past my pay grade. I haven't figured out what those equations equal, but he's smart enough to know that what we know is that we don't know something. That's yes what we know. That's the only thing that we know.
Yes.
Okay. So the first part is, yes, that was a moment. And then shortly thereafter, after I donated a plasma, I almost lost my vision on my right side. My eye tore in three different places behind. And I suddenly went from everything is fine to something is really wrong to you need emergency surgery and you can't get into an operating room, but we need an operating room. And I remember the moment of thinking, okay, my life has changed forever. I don't know what's happening next. As I'm saying this, I got very heavy. I went back in my memory to responding to the burning towers on September 11, 01, and the miracles that I witnessed and the destruction that I witnessed and the power of leadership that I witnessed and the opposite. and it was all simultaneous, and it's forever locked into my DNA, if you will. And so I thought to myself, okay, this is a moment for me to take ownership and leadership internally. And then I need to be a father. I'm a son. I'm a brother. I'm a community leader. I have so many roles, but right now I need to take care of me, and I am helpless, not hopeless, helpless. And you asked me about hopeless, but I felt helpless.
Yes.
And in that moment, I remembered, my name is Ezra. There's a a verse in Psalms that says, Ezri, which is like Ezra, Ezri, help, Me'im Hashem, comes from the Almighty.
Yes.
And I thought, if anyone is capable of navigating this moment of quote unquote helplessness and hopelessness, it's me. I just have to remember my name. Because the time that I can most rely on the Almighty, and I can understand that my human dimension, the soul housed in this body, has zero control over this. The only thing I might control is my attitude towards it.
Yes.
To be hopeful or hopeless. And so I sat with the surgeon. I went to three different doctors. I sat with the surgeon, and he said to me, I'm going to need to do A, B, C, D, and there's no hope, and blah, 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 whatever he was saying about being able to do this versus that. Yeah. And I looked him in the eye, I said, doctor, listen, you're a surgeon, you're top of your field, you're in the best hospital, I'm here sitting with you and I'm relying on you. But remember that you rely on somebody else, there's a creator to this universe who runs the show. And I'm here for a reason with you in this room for I don't know what reason. I would like you to give me the benefit of the doubt, and if I can, have a choice. And he had me sign three separate releases and waivers for three separate surgeries.
Yeah.
He said, you got it. I'm going to trust what you just said, but you need to trust me. I will do right by you. I need permission to go minimal, medium, totally invasive, like all of them. And you're going to be drugged up. You're going to be out of it. You'll be in a different place, so you can't sign the middle.
Yes.
And I said, okay. And I came a few hours later, the next morning it was, they had to wait. And I was about, he's wheeling me in. They already started a line with anesthesia. And I looked at him, I said, doctor, give me your hands, please. And he puts his hands in my hands, and I said, I'm saying a prayer now for you and I. We are partners because my vision is dependent on your hands. Yes. And I'm praying to God that he instructs your hands and that they go and do the best job possible for whatever his will is. Mm-hmm. And then they knocked me out. Mm-hmm. And I woke up, and he said to me, I don't understand, but somehow we managed to do it. It's a miracle. I used one stitch, and you had the most minimal surgery possible. Yeah. Despite the three tears that were going on in the back of your eye. And it's been a 2-year struggle. And just recently, I was at my most recent checkup. I could actually see clearly, the most clearly I've seen in 2 years, the blue dot in the machine. Mm. But to answer the question, in that place of hopelessness, really helplessness, not hopelessness, is where the most hope comes from. Because hope without God, to me, is hopium. It's not based on something. It's not grounded in something. Mm-hmm. But if you could recognize, not you, anyone could recognize, I'm really talking to myself and I don't want to preach.
Yeah.
I don't want to preach. I'm sharing something that's deeply personal to me in an open way with you. And so I'm conscious of that statement. I'm going to say it as an I, and I welcome anyone to evaluate this for themselves. Yeah. I feel strongly. It is so clear and present to me God's existence in the world at every minute, every time, in every microcosm of the multiverse, as you called it, that when we feel that moment of helpless and or hopeless, it might be the only real time that we let go of our need for control and our pseudo-control that we think we have, and we're actually being hopeful with the context of faith behind it. Because hopeful without faith is pointless.
Yes.
Almost.
Yes. That's fascinating. I mean, what you've just said now, because we were sitting at Vermont and having this whole conversation about hope, you know, like continuously working with constructs and trying to figure it out. And it's always interesting, this human experience, that technically it is constructed, right? And I think I'm trained as a construct psychologist, so
they didn't tell me that, Dr. Mungesi. They left that fact out. No wonder. Okay, now I know what's going on. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
You're good at
so what continuously happens is continuously checking what do people mean by the words they say. Because I find that we take it so much for granted in terms of meaningfulness meaning making. With words, and we think you spoke about hope, and then I think, oh, I know what you're talking about, right? However, it's interesting because one of the things we started talking about was hope and faith.
Yes.
Right? And then we go, is there a difference? Because the fact that there are two names for this thing as a construct, there must be two different constructs or two different things. Is it?
Oh boy.
Because you said hope without faith, which means there's two things there.
It's interesting how you're taking that apart. I'd really need to think about it a lot.
Yeah.
I'd really have to really think deeply about this.
Yeah. While you do
that, answer this. Oh, God,
it's probably a good time to take a quick break and allow you to think about this, because I don't even know where it comes from. You are on VOC Online Radio, and we are doing Leadership Monday. That's not Leadership Mondays. That's the Hope Maker Show. That's another show. Leadership Mondays is another show. We'll be back with Rabbi Ezra when we come back. But for now, just go and ask yourself, is there a difference between hope and faith? But which one do you go to as a listener? Which one do you go to when things don't go the way you want? We'll be back after this.
In many countries on our continent, gay people face discrimination and intolerance on a daily basis, and their rights are non-existent. To find out more about what it's like to be a gay man in Tanzania, we are going to phone Anthony Mbise, a gay Tanzanian man.
Central Prison Services. Hello?
But we can't, because he's currently in jail for being gay under Tanzanian law. He has been in jail for over a year. Help us fight for gay rights on our continent. Go to the SA Human Rights website to find out how you can help. P.S. Anthony Mbise isn't his real name. Using his real name would only make his situation worse.
Broadcasting worldwide, online 24/7.
It's VOCA Online, your inspiration radio station.
Welcome back to the Hope Maker Show. I didn't forget this time. I do three shows on the radio, as well. Hence, I said earlier, me, I have no problem with purpose because I know exactly what I'm busy with each time. I do the leadership show on Mondays. I do the Hope Maker Show on Wednesdays. And then I do the jazz show on Fridays.
Oh, the jazz show. I missed that one. That's what I thought I was signing up for.
And throughout, I know exactly what I'm doing, even with that. And you said something very powerful just before we took a break when we were talking, when you talked about your name. So when I went into that whole frame, and this is where we start talking about difference, and we act as if, as humans, we are too different because we are focusing quite a lot on our casing and our primary dimensions. Our people, where I come from, they have a saying about the name. They essentially say, a bad name is a curse, literally translated, a bad name is a curse, a good name is praise. I give you a great name as a parent, I'm essentially giving you, conferring abundance upon you, while if I give you a bad name, I am conferring, of course, what the name means. But there's something fascinating about names, and whenever we do this whole purpose work, I get people to kind of go into, what's the accident of your name? Because sometimes we think it was an accident, and then they start really realizing that there was a whole thought process that went into this curse or this blessing that people gave you. So when you were saying something there about, I go to my name and I go, what's your name? And I'm like, wow, look at how similar we are as well in terms of that. But let's go back to this thing. I just wanted to highlight that very quickly because I found that quite useful. Is there a difference between hope and faith?
I think what you said earlier about language and the construct of language and how we use it.
Yeah.
many times we give meaning to a word, not only to the word, but to the context of how the word is being. So it's both. It's the naming convention of the word,
yes,
right? Which can then be paradoxically a curse or a blessing, as you said.
Yes.
And so
yes.
It's not only about naming a person, but it might be naming a situation. We have post-traumatic growth or post-traumatic distress. We have post-traumatic incident, or we have post-traumatic disorder. And really, the language that we're going to use to describe it will influence how we relate to it. So the naming convention creates an association. So to answer your question about hope and faith, I look at hope as something that I'm visioning or imagining, a desired outcome. And faith and belief, which might not even be the same thing.
Yes.
Faith and belief are distinct, and maybe I'll talk about that in a minute.
But. Sure, sure, sure.
So a vision or an expectation or a desired outcome might be hope. It might be a plan, but that is a hope for the how your plan might develop or what your plan might be. A person who cannot see a plan, cannot see an outcome that's agreeable to them, might say, I feel hopeless.
Yes.
And what they mean is that I don't see a way out of the mess that I'm in right now, or I'm in a terrible situation potentially that I can't see a way out of. So I feel hopeless. Mm-hmm. Or the possibilities for me out there are not ones that I want. Like it's a double bind, for instance. It's a situation where either one is bad or one's worse than the other, etc.
Yes.
And then the faith component is, well, there's a bigger picture here. We're just one tiny little microcosm of a speck of on the spectrum of infinity in the spectrum of all the other people. What do we have? 7 billion people on the planet ish right now. I mean, like we're two of 7 billion. I don't know how many 0.000s go into figuring out who we are, that we're on this radio show right now talking about this thing.
Yes.
And it's not coincidence.
Yes.
Lean in a little bit closer, dear listener. It's not coincidence.
Yes.
That's faith. Yes. I believe to the core of my being that it's not coincidence. I also know that from when my parents conceived me, named me, and my whole life from 17 to 27 to 37 till here,
yes,
leads us to this conversation.
Yeah.
With a series of incidents and introductions and missteps and mistakes and errors and trials and tribulations and wins and more wins and losses and wins and up days and down days and all that stuff.
Yes.
So I can tell you the story of my surgery 2 years ago that I didn't have 2 years ago. Because if I would have met you 2 years ago, we wouldn't be on the Hope Maker show and Greg wouldn't have sponsored it. The whole thing, all of that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's so perfect.
Yes.
Perfect for what? I don't know yet.
Yes.
Perfect for something. It might not even be something you and I recognize in our lifetime.
Yes.
The great-grandchildren might one day be listening to this exchange or watching this exchange on some device that hasn't even yet been created. They'll be like, what were those old dudes talking about?
Yes, yes.
I don't know.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
But if that kid in that moment, that 17-year-old, hears our voices and goes, oh, my angst is normal for 2022.
Yes.
I'm okay.
Yeah.
We right now, today, created hope for someone 100 years from now, potentially.
Potentially, yeah.
Potentially. That, well, potential is while we're alive. Once we're gone, well, here's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
I was about to say while we're gone, we don't have potential, but we're creating potential.
Yes.
Because if we get out of this body and we think of the larger construct, the multiverse, as you called it.
Yes.
The soul lives on, and the impact of what we did or didn't do along the way.
Yes.
The impact. The legacy of the impact of what we did or didn't do, the choices that we took or didn't take. Mm. You know, I was talking yesterday about a Rolex and a Patek and a Patek advertisement. I don't remember it, so that's not so good. It's something about you only hold on to it for a generation. You like pass it on. And that's just a watch. What about knowledge, wisdom, feeling, intensity, lessons? I mean, there's so many good things beyond watches that we can share. That don't require money,
yes.
That don't require steam in a massive way, that don't require location, that don't require things, material at any level. Yeah. Because that moment, walking with your 17-year-old son or daughter, nephew or niece, brother or sister, connecting meaningfully, deeply, being there present with them, sharing a moment, that moment can last not only a lifetime, but multiple lifetimes.
Yeah.
And as I'm saying this, I'm getting emotional because I am realizing that the moments that we created for the girls in our school, the moments that we create when we interact with people out there in the world,
yes,
are life-giving.
Yes.
Life-giving. If we can give life, if we can provide hope, in this case, we're literally breathing life into another being who will then go on potentially, again, the potential, to create a life with other lives, with little lives and baby lives and baby lives and great grandbaby lives.
Yes.
From a moment.
Yes.
A single moment. And it can be from just a smile, a hello.
Yeah.
It can be from a tap on the shoulder. You're okay.
Yeah.
You'll be okay. It will be okay. There's so many variables. It doesn't have to be huge and extreme.
Yeah.
So go back to hope and faith.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and that's a lot. I think that the whole connection and connectivity and connectedness of everything, essentially what I'm hearing here is it really depends on degrees of possibility and plausibility, which means possibly faith is there's a possibility, but you don't know. However, with hope, there is some level of probability that this could happen because you could see, but you still don't know.
I want to flip that for a moment.
Okay.
I think that hope is possibility and faith is probability.
Aha.
Hope is possibility and faith is probability.
The power of constructs, eh?
Yes.
I wonder how you would say that in my language. So that's another story altogether.
Please tell me, how would you say that in your language?
I don't know either, actually. Because we probably don't have a construct for those two differentiations.
Really?
Because it kind of crossed my mind now. I mean, people think, it's always interesting when people talk about Africa, for some reason, there's always this perception that it's this one huge, humongous, homogenous piece of forest, right? But we have 2,500 languages at least in 54 countries. So, and I know that in my where I'm born and where I'm raised, we have at least 11 languages of which I can speak. Five, maybe six, right? And so I kind of need to figure out, based on that, this is a challenge I'm going to give myself. But speaking of challenge, I'm going to ask you this question, but before I do, think about a challenge you want to give to the listeners. When they finish, as we wrap up, we'll wrap up with a challenge that you just throw at them. What challenge do you want them to take away with, when the show ends? But while you have that at the back of your mind, complete this sentence. What the world needs today is ...
Wow. What the world needs today is that's a really big question.
I know.
What the world needs today. I don't know. I wish I could answer that question. I don't know. I can tell you what I hope for.
Sure.
Maybe that could influence the answer.
Yeah.
What I hope for is that the world could recognize that it's not just an accident. The world itself is not an accident. That the world operates in a perfect alignment of values of godliness or godly values. And this is religion independent. So this is not about a religion versus another. It's about recognizing that God created the world and put us here with all the different challenges and struggles that we have. And we are here in this moment at in time. So that's time in space on this planet, in this body. So confined. And that constraint, that focus of time, space, body, focuses the vibrational energy that we bring, including the name, the label around it. If we go to the, I forgot his name, the message in the bottle, the Japanese scientist, right? The name is the label on the bottle.
Yes.
It focuses the vibrational energy, enabling choice points, specific choice points, not the same choice points. In the languages that you grew up speaking and that you learned, there are certain choice points. There's no language for certain things. In the languages I grew up speaking, there might not be words that you need to have in Africa, right? And so the choice points, time and space, and language is part of that. Because humans, the uniqueness of humans is speech, is thought and speech. And they go together, I think. Because that expression and communication is that we learn to communicate better. And that we recognize that there's a purpose for everything. And we align with those godly values, with the intentions, if you will, and that's where religion comes in, because what are those godly values, maybe, but essentially, if we could just respect one another, if we could respect the basic humanity of one another and communicate effectively, everything would change.
Yeah.
Everything would change. And no, it doesn't mean we're all going to agree. We'll never all agree. We're not supposed to.
Yes.
We have different needs.
Yeah.
We have different values. We have different drives. We have different mechanics. We have different DNA strands. We have diversity is important. Trying to make everybody the same is counterproductive, in my opinion.
In fact, it probably is exactly the definition of madness, right? I mean,
it might
be. If you think about, I mean, my favorite phrase is each of us is one in 8 billion. And
can you imagine we all have the same fingerprints? Chaos.
Chaos. Now, challenge. But before we talk about challenge, I want to talk about teenagers for 2 seconds. Otherwise, I'm going to be in trouble. Let's give hope to parents at home. Are teenagers real humans, or should we be worried?
I don't understand the question. I'm sorry. I'm sure that teenagers are real humans.
Never mind. I think usually that's kind of like the angst that you get as soon as you get the parent and the teenager in the room. I don't even think you're human at all.
Right. So here's such an interesting thing. Can I talk about a challenge and I don't want to call it a failure, a lesson, a 20-year plus lesson.
Yes.
I, for more than 20 years, I you asked me earlier in the show and I didn't answer you this piece, but I will tell you this. Yes. I was volunteering with kids who were coming out of drug addiction programs. They were coming out of rehab, and it was taking a lot of time, effort, and energy to support them in reintegrating with their families, with their communities, with life, because they were in an alter reality with medications, you know, a medically assisted alter reality. And they were, it's tough to come back. Developmentally, there's so much happening in a teenager's life. But if you chemically alter it, you kind of shift the whole rest of their life, not always for the better. And so I was working in corporate. I had a prestigious, good position, and I was doing well, considering I was a young man, and I was driven and out there and traveling. And when September 11, 2001 happened and the towers came down, I had stopped to pray for 90 seconds before I left that morning. And my partner was like, no, now's not the time for prayer. Now's the time for responding. I'm like, no, I can't leave without praying. I need to pray. because prayer is important. It's a cornerstone of my faith, belief. It's part of my hope. It's part of my everything. It's part of how I live. Mm-hmm. His ambulance, he was in a few cars ahead of me, got hit by debris coming off the tower. Those 90 seconds, I can point to 12 people today who would not be here, nor would I with you, if not for that 90 seconds of prayer.
Yes.
20 some odd years ago.
Yes.
I have more stories similar to that, but that one is, I get the chills telling it to you so many years later.
Yes.
So that led to some, I'm going to talk about post-traumatic growth. So that was a post-traumatic, that was a traumatic incident that led to post-traumatic angst, which led to post-traumatic growth. Yep. This is my new way of describing it, my new label.
Yes.
And it led to me going to Israel to pray and really find out what was most important in my life, my purpose. Because selling another $1 million worth of new technology wasn't going to make a difference in the world. Nobody cares. Yes. In fact, I just spoke to somebody this morning who was in a similar industry 10 years behind me, and he told me it's almost obsolete. The whole technology that I was on the cutting edge of, that technology doesn't exist 20 years later. But you know what does exist 20 years later? Thousands of lives impacted, upgraded, elevated, motivated, performing, doing. And I don't have 100% success rate. No. But I certainly have way better than most others in the context of helping people move forward.
Yes.
We don't sit around and say, oh, poor me. That's not how my office works. That's not how our programming works, right? Okay. So I just realized there was a brag in there. I wasn't intending that, but I'll acknowledge myself and pat myself on the back. And
Bread away.
Thank you. I'm not used to it, so it's good for me to say it once in a while. Here we go. Thank you, Dr. Mungesi. You're bringing out that side of me that needed to be expressed. I appreciate you. I should probably send you like a fee for
my pleasure.
And all your radio listeners, really, we should give them a small commission for creating this space, right? Because they're supporting it and elevating this.
You don't even know. I'm going to be asking you where they get you, because they're going to be coming for you after this.
Oh my gosh, I don't even know how to find myself. Like, you want them to find me? So here's the point that I'm trying to get to. I stood there praying. I went for 3 days. I stayed for 10. And I spent a good portion of each day saying almost these words: God, I know you hear me. I know I'm 1 in 7 billion. I know I may not be that important, and I know that I'm critically important to you, because every one of your humans is important to you. I matter, they matter, and we all matter to you. So if there's something that I need to be doing in this planet, in this world, in this lifetime, please allow me to do it already. Like, let me stop wasting time and get to work. And if you're not going to just hand me an answer on a silver platter, because I'm not worthy of that answer directly, I get it. When the opportunity crosses in front of my face, help me just grab it with two hands and jump in and get it done. And I this was heartfelt. This was like from the core of my being, trying to find the answer to the question that we talked about earlier about purpose.
Yes.
And I was hopeful and optimistic, and I wanted to believe that my prayers would be answered, not on my terms, on God's terms, because I needed to take me out of the equation. You know, and my eye surgery, I've been asking this question for 2 years. I still ask it. What is it that I'm paying too much attention to, and I think that I see? Or what is it that I'm not supposed to be paying attention to? Like, don't let your eyes delude you to think that this reality is the whole picture. It's not. Yeah. Yeah. There's so much more reality back to the scientist that we don't see, that we don't measure. Yes. Sound waves we don't see, they still happen.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. It's just an example. We can measure heart waves. We can measure. We don't see them. We can feel them. Mm. I can feel my child across the country who's right now in Manchester, England. Mm. Right? I miss him. He misses me. And then the phone rings. Hey, Dad. And so my point is that we don't see these things. We don't have a way to measure these things, but that we know they exist.
They exist, yeah.
The same is true about the Almighty for me. And so then the question comes back to, is the same purpose every single day? Does it change? Does it shift? How do you upgrade? How do you grow? How do you elevate? And keep going. So you asked me, are teenagers real? Yes, absolutely real. Not only that, they are transitioning beings. And when we can recognize the angst of the teenager, exists in a very focused, concentrated way.
Yeah.
When we turn 20 or when we turn 30 and 40 and 50, it happens again.
Yes.
We transition. And yes. That midlife crisis at 40, to anybody who's in their 40s, yeah. is the new teenager showing up. It's an adult teenager. Don't tell anyone. And then when we hit 50, something yeah. changes again. It's not literally a 50. It's yeah. a number, but somewhere yeah. in the range. Every yeah. 5 or 10 years or so developmentally. And then as time, as we age, it slows down. And I think there's research in neurochemistry and neuroplasticity about how we evolve and develop that you probably could tell better than me. I just know it. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know it. And I'm talking about it as if I know what I'm saying. And I can't prove it to you. And I never measured it. And I haven't looked at the MRIs, but I'm told that they exist.
Yeah, yeah. They do, actually. So there's a lot of evidence around, even with teenagers, I think. Yes. The measurement around the level of hormonal activity, the level of when the cells grow and when they stop, that what happens in terms of the brain cells and how they shift. It is such a complex thing. But what I like about what you've just said now, because I was actually going to ask that question differently. I was going to say, what do you, as a last closing word, what do you think parents don't understand about teenagers that if they do understand, they'll deal with them better? Because I don't think they can solve them.
Right? I love that question. The number one thing your teenagers are there to teach you, look in the mirror.
Yes.
If they're your teenagers, God created them for you to learn something from them, just like you're there to teach them.
Yes.
So look in the mirror and ask, what is this teenager here to teach me about me and yes. how I relate to them? And yes. if we do that well, guaranteed positive results every time.
Yeah.
But it's not easy.
Hey, tell me about it. I sit on the phone forever trying to solve problem. I didn't have these problems, you know, like I was a model child.
Well, now you have a way to experience not being a model child, because being a model child, you didn't have that tension and pressure like the diamond to grow. It's for your growth. Say thank you, dear child who's driving.
Thank you, dear child. Energy by Rabbi Ezra Max is an experienced professional certified coach, expert facilitator supporting businesses, executives, parents, and even teenagers to overcome their struggles and challenges. And you work also in the areas of, I think I've been hearing a lot of it coming through, PTSD, trauma recovery, self-regulation. So those are some of the things. If people want to connect with you, Ezra, where could they go?
The best place to find me is at EzraMax.com, EzraMax.com. It's a holding pattern website that gives you a way to be in contact or read about me or read some articles that were published. And it's really just meant as a place for someone to connect. It's not meant to be a full scale. Here's all the information. Here's where it goes. And and if I may, I will say this, that part of my current teenager, part of my current teenager tells me that working with executives, working with business owners, managing teams, has shown me that the difference between teams and teens is almost the same. They're very similar. And if you can get through to your teenagers, it's way easier to get through to your team members.
Nice.
The same skill set. The same skill set. Because everybody wants to be respected. Mm. Everybody loves effective communication. Mm. Everyone needs healthy boundaries. Mm. We would all benefit from better self-regulation. I could keep going, but essentially all those tools and skills that I've been honing and developing, working with teens over these years, quietly, I've been working with business owners and executives. Mm-hmm. And now I think I'm going to flip that and spend more of my time in the next stage, at this stage of my life, mm-hmm. focused on team leaders, mm-hmm. because I have a whole generation, literally, of clients that I've worked with who are now leaders themselves, mm-hmm. literally leaders of themselves. And if I sit and speak to leaders who are around my age, and I'm a little bit more mature than I was 10 or 20 years ago, just a little bit, not much, a little bit. I feel strongly that leaders who are reignited and can take this next leap, they will create exponential positive result in the world.
Yes.
That is when you asked me earlier about, well, maybe you didn't ask me. I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
I have hope.
Yes.
To create a container, yes. A vessel,
yes.
To reignite, to ignite even greater already ignited leaders.
Yes.
And that observation, that is part of what I'm coming out of this 2 years of struggling to see clearly and having eyes that see different things and being tired and overwhelmed mentally and emotionally because it's so challenging to do simple things sometimes.
Yes.
I'm hopeful. Yes. I'm hopeful for humanity. Yes. I'm hopeful that people can change, even in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Yes.
I'm optimistic. Yes. I expect that people who want can change. And that's because I have hope and I have faith. Because I know one thing to be true. And this is a challenge. You asked me for a challenge. I don't know if we're ending yet. But I have a challenge.
Sure.
I jumped ahead. I'm sorry. Here's my challenge. Dear listener, challenge. I'm challenging myself. I'm looking in the mirror. And if you're listening to this, feel free to accept the same challenge. How can I acknowledge God's goodness every single day, number one? And number two, how can I elevate what I'm doing even more to create more good in the world? And if what I'm doing is not creating good in the world, then how can I find good to be doing in the world? Now, I'm not assuming anyone listening is not doing good. I actually assume they are doing good.
Yes.
They may not realize how much good they're doing. So the first step is to just see that own goodness and be grateful for the opportunity to do it. Because as long as we're alive, we have the potential to keep doing bigger and better things.
That's a powerful challenge. It can actually change a lot of people, a lot of the world, if we take it up. Thank you so much as well. And we usually close the show with a song.
Oh.
What song should I play for you to close the show?
I would ask for Ani Mamen. I don't know if you've ever heard the song Ani Mamen.
I will play whatever song you want us to play.
I'm not good in music, I'll tell you the truth. But there's a song called Ani Mamen. And the song really talks about hope and faith. It's I believe.
Yes.
And I am hopeful that the majesty of the Almighty will be revealed for all. And that we will be able to live in that glorious, enlightened world where people are on task and on purpose and doing what they need to be doing to move themselves forward without the drama and trauma that we currently require to help us find that purpose.
Yeah. Can you spell that for me?
Oh, A-N-I space, M like Michael, A-A-M-I-N. I'm not sure. And there might be different versions of it. So.
Yeah, that's good. That's good enough. We have like a 5,000 song database, so we should be able to find it there.
That's fabulous.
Yes, Ezra, fabulous. Thank you so much, man. Thank you for the conversation. Thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you for your energy that you brought today. Thank you for the challenge. And thank you for bringing God into the conversation. It hasn't happened explicitly because, of course, we all have different ways that we believe. But to you, the listener at home, remember that hope is the seed of data in our heads that tells us it will be all right if we nurture it. I wish you breathe for the rest of the week until we meet again next week on the Hope Makers Show. And have a lovely one.
If you're enjoying this interruption and find the sound of my voice captivating, you may be experiencing extreme boredom.
Try new, fast-acting Subaru Impreza in hatch or sedan, formulated with symmetrical full-time all-wheel drive. Cure boredom fast with new Impreza.
Since 2017, we are proud to associate ourselves with some of the best jazz music in the country and the continent. Sibusiso Mashilwane, Zoe Mudika, Tuduzo Makatini, Tandin Dule, Tabang Tabani, and many others. This year, we are at it again, So we invite musicians, music companies, radio stations, jazz clubs to nominate yourselves and those who deserve recognition. Visit www.zajazzawards.co.za, then come and join us. Whether online or face-to-face, come and celebrate, venerate, and recognize jazz with us for the Mzansi Jazz Awards. See you there.
The Africa Center for Work-Based Learning is a professional development center for professionals who aim to improve their professional standing. This means that the learning programs we run are more than just academic programs. They are work-based programs that focus on leveraging your current experience as a professional to build your overall profile. A year down the line, the Africa Center for Work-Based Learning is developing into a preferred center for professional development in Pretoria, with 8 professional development faculties including accounting, teaching, entrepreneurship, as well as IT and many more. For more information, go to acwbl.org or dial +27 12 751 7608. The Africa Center for Work-Based Learning, where work is learning.